I want to make another comment on the passage of Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1, we see the word, the name Rahab in here. And you'll see the genealogy. You know how the genealogy goes? Matthew writes it in verse 2, Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Judah. Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah. By Tamar, now there are five women named in here. By Tamar, who was Tamar? Tamar was Judah's daughter-in-law, married to one of Judah's sons. The son died, and Judah just did not. He was supposed to bring in one of his, give her one of the other sons to raise up children to be in the lineage and the genealogy, but he didn't do it. A number of people believe that, and a lot of the Jews believe that Tamar was not an Israelite, that she was probably a woman from the area, but not an Israelite, not from Jacob. Judah would not give to Tamar, so she schemed, made herself look like a harlot, went out and tempted Judah. He went into her, and he became the father. She got pregnant by her father-in-law and became the father of Perez and the father of Zerah. So these two lines that moved on down, and Perez was the father of Hezron. So Joseph's lineage here came through the Perez line, and Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nahshon. Nahshon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. So Boaz, who married Ruth, was the son of Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth. Now you say, well, Ruth was a good woman. You know, now most of these women are not. There's a real scandal here, right, with all these women. Tamar, what did she do? She lured her father-in-law and became like a harlot to lure her father-in-law into a relationship to raise up children for her lost husband. Ruth was a good woman, absolutely fine woman. However, she was not a totally pure woman. There's a phrase in the book of Ruth. She's advised by her mother-in-law to lay at Boaz's feet. Go lay at his feet. Feet in the Old Testament is a metaphor for your sexual organs. Feet, when you uncover someone's feet, it's a metaphor for exposing them, you know, their nakedness. And that's a metaphor. So Ruth probably, you know, sort of seduced Boaz so that he would end up marrying her. He was the father of Obed. Obed then was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David the king. David the king was the father of Solomon. Solomon he was born from David by Bathsheba. Bathsheba, who was the wife of Uriah. Now, actually, the New American Standard Version puts the word Bathsheba, but Bathsheba is not in the Greek. It's just by her who was the wife of Uriah. They don't put her name in here, but she's referred to. Bathsheba is referred to. And what did she do? She committed adultery. She cheated on her husband, who was in the war with David. Now David brought her up, but she could have said, "No, I don't want to come up to your castle." But she did. So she did too. So there's only one woman in here who didn't do that, and that's in verse 16, all the way down to Jacob was the father of Joseph. Joseph, the husband of Mary, by whom Jesus was born, who was called the Messiah, who was called the Christ. So all the way down to Mary. But so when the Jews, other Jews, looked at Jesus and said, "Well, we're not born of fornication. They thought, of course, Mary was single and that she had gotten pregnant before. We're not born of fornication. They weren't real too far from a certain amount of truth all the way back in his lineage with these women. We're not born from sexual sins. Which shows us, you know, we are who we are, not who our grandparents, great-grandparents, and other people were. You are held accountable for your own character. And race, religion, I mean race and grandparents and lineage and social status, it doesn't mean that much before God in the long run. It's who you are, what kind of person you are, your character. All right, I just wanted to point that out a little bit more thoroughly than I think I did before. Now we're coming back to a man who is now leading Israel in place of Moses. In the place of Moses, here is Joshua. And we start in chapter 3. If you remember chapter 3, there, Joshua gives the order. He rises up early like he always does. He gets up early and he's back at work. And he's at the end of 3 days, he tells them, you know, you just lodge there. At the end of 3 days, the officers in the middle of the camp, he tells them. You'll see in verses 2 and 3, he tells the officers tell the people. So there was a structure, an organizational structure that he said, I'm going to tell you and you and you, and then they spread out. That organizational structure took place, and all the people began to learn about what was going to happen, and the Levitical priests were to carry the Ark of the Covenant. They were to follow. The people were to follow where the priests went, leaving a long distance, close to a half mile between them and the Ark of the Covenant. Joshua said, I want you to go there, take up the Ark of the Covenant, and go. And verse 7 is very interesting. Now the Eternal said to Joshua, this day I will begin, it's just the beginning, to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. Now, this is the first beginning of the way that God was going to exalt this man whose name was Joshua, which meant the Eternal saves, the Eternal salvation. Verse 8, you shall moreover command the priests and to carry the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. So he's telling them what they're... These are all the orders. Now it's interesting how the Hebrew scriptures, they tell you what you're going to do. They say, this is what you're supposed to do. And then you, a little later on in the chapter, they tell you what you did, which is exactly what they told you you were going to do, you see. This is what you're supposed to do. And Joshua tells him, you come here in the words of the, and hear the words of the Eternal your God. And Joshua then said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, verse 10, and that he will assuredly dispossess from before you the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Girgazites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. All of these are various tribes of in the area of Canaan. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you into the Jordan. Now, then, take for yourselves 12 men of the tribe. Certain men were designated for certain things. And it shall come about, and the soles of the feet of the priests carry the Ark. When they come into the Ark and all the earth, the Eternal of all the earth, and they rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan will be cut off, and the waters which are flowing down from above, and they'll stand in one heap. Now, so he's predicted, this is what's going to happen. Watch it, the Lord of all the earth is going to do this. And so when the people set out from their tents to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, you'll see it there, they're carrying the Ark, and they come into the Jordan, and the feet of the priests carrying the Ark were dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows its banks for all the days of harvest. So they have a lot of rain up north, and then by the time it gets down south area, the Jordan is overflowing its banks. So in verse 16, the waters which were flowing from above, as the priests move into this river, the waters coming from above, coming from the north, stop. The waters from the south keep going. So now you have this large area. Here are all these priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant. You know, they're long poles. It may have been as wide as this room. And from that side, the waters are coming. They keep flowing. They're not stopped from above, but they're stopped from not touching the priests, not touching the Ark of the Covenant. And what happens to them? Well, they begin to pile up like a dam, like somebody dammed them up. And here they were rising higher and higher. This part now is gone. So now this went, but this part is now above. So here they are. So the waters which were flowing down, verse 16, from above, stood and rose in one heap a great distance away at Adam, called the city there, the city that is beside this other city. And those which were flowing down toward the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off, and the people crossed opposite Jericho. So now the people could come. Now you got a lot of people. A lot of people had to hurry, come on, let's go. And getting across. And the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the stood firm on the ground in the middle of the Jordan while all Israel crossed on dry ground until the nation had finished crossing the Jordan. The nation. Now, let's say you had, well, we know that just the Reubenites and the Gadites, the ones that had were going to come now and lead the way, there were 40,000 of them. How long do you think it would take 40,000 people to cross a river that might be as wide as from this building to cross the street over there? It might not, I don't think it was much wider than that. And it's not, Jordan is not a big wide river, not like the Mississippi or anything like that. So how long would you think it takes 40,000 people? How long would you think it takes the rest of the tribes crossing as fast as they can? These are armed men. These are armed people that are crossing the people. And now you got to bring up the other people later. But these are the battle-ready people coming across, going toward Jericho. Now when all the nation had finished, verse chapter 4, they had finished crossing. Okay, there's no nation, no break there. They had finished crossing the Jordan. The Eternal spoke to Joshua, saying, "Take yourself 12 men, each man is from the tribe, and they're going to carry these stones, okay, and carry them with you and lay them down, lodging place where you will judge, you will be tonight." And they were supposed to command them, saying, "Take up for yourself 12 stones and carry them where you're going to lodge. And these are going to be for memorial. You're going to put them down in the lodging place where you will lay tonight." And then Joshua called the 12, and they appointed them. But here they were, the tribes. Verse 5, Joshua said to them, "Cross over with the ark and in the middle of the Eternal your God in the middle of the Jordan. And each of you take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And this is a sign among you that for your children to ask later, why are these stones around? And you tell them, this is where we cross. This is what you tell them, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal when he crossed the waters, and they were cut off. So the stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever." Now, you understand forever in the Old Testament means what? Means as long as things are the same way, forever. But it doesn't mean like in our English thinking of forever, we just think it's forever and ever and ever and ever. It doesn't have that same meaning. It does not have that same meaning. Forever means as long as conditions that were there at the time continue to exist. So here we go, verse 8. "Then the sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded. They did the stones, the sons of Israel, they took over and they put them down. Verse 9, Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests had carried." Now he wants to put those 12 stones, I guess, in the middle of the Jordan. "For the priests who carried the ark were standing in the middle of the Jordan, and everything was completed until everything was completed that the Eternal had commanded Joshua to speak to the people according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed. You know, there, get going. You got to hurry. You know, let's move it. If you go across the river. And when all the people had finished crossing, the ark of the eternal and the priests crossed before the people. Now, it means before, it doesn't mean ahead of them, but it means in the sight of all these people. Here came the Ark of the Covenant. They stood there in the middle of this river till everybody crossed. Then they came, and then they had to go ahead. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, crossed over in battle array before the sons of Israel, just as Moses has spoken to them. About 40,000 equipped for war crossed in the battle before the Eternal to the desert plains of Jericho. So on that day, verse 14, God, the Eternal, exalted. Verse 14, this is chapter 4, verse 14. The Eternal exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, so they revered him, just as they had revered Moses all the days of his life. Now, they didn't particularly revere Moses. At one point, you know, they wanted to tell him, did you bring us out here to kill us? Did you do this? But most of the people revered Moses. And the people here revered Joshua. Now, the Eternal said to Joshua, command the priests who carry the Ark of the Testimony that they come up from the Jordan. So it's time to come up. Get up. And Joshua commanded the priests, come on up. And it came about when the priests who carried the Ark of the Eternal had come up from the middle of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted to the dry ground, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place, in verse 18, and went all over its banks just as it did before. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month and encamped at a place called Gilgal, which meant a crossing or a rolling. Gilgal kind of means like a rolling something. And on the edge of the Jericho, on the edge of Jericho. Now, they had not come to Jericho. Now, they'd crossed over the banks of the Jordan. They are now looking at the city of Jericho, but they're not up to it yet. So they came. Isn't it interesting? On the 10th day of the first month. Well, what happens on the 10th day of the first month? What happened in the Old Testament times? That's when they set the lamb aside on the 10th day. Everybody had to put a Passover lamb in ancient Israel on the 10th day of the first month. They kept it to the 14th. They killed it in the afternoon of the 14th, called even, and they had to spread that blood over the doorpost. You remember that? So this is almost to the day, 40 years, you know. I mean, not quite 40 years, because they had come into the wilderness. It wasn't long after they left Egypt before they rebelled. They wouldn't go further. You know, that wasn't long. And so here we are, a little over 40 years, almost to the day that they had taken the Passover and set that lamb aside. Now here, finally, all the promises. They were slaves in Egypt a little over 40 years ago. Here they are now on the 10th day of the first month. The people came up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. Those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. He said to the sons of Israel, when your children ask your fathers, and the same repeat of what he was going to do, then you shall inform them what the children of Israel crossed in the dry ground. For the Eternal your God dried up the waters of the Jordan until you had crossed, and just as the Eternal had done to the Red Sea, which he dried before us until we had crossed. That all the peoples of the earth, verse 24, all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Eternal is mighty, so that you may fear the Eternal your God forever. That was the reason to do this miracle. If you'll notice how much he is trying to keep these people with faith, with belief, with trust and obedience. You know, they have to trust God, they have to obey the word of God that came through Joshua. Now, You're going to go and you're going to fight, okay? Here are these tribes. Here's Canaan. You have to conquer this land. You've got your battle array people, okay? And now all of a sudden, here's what happens. Chapter 5. Now it came about when all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were beyond the sea heard that the Eternal had dried up the waters. Oh, they were well informed before the sons of Israel until they had crossed, that their hearts melted. They had spies, they had people looking. Oh, you can't believe it. You know, the waters just stopped. You think I'm running back? No. Yeah, they did. And their hearts melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the sons of Israel. At that time, the Eternal said to Joshua, now, it's nice that these people are already softened up for the kill, so to speak. You know, they just don't have any, I mean, whoever these people are, they're coming with a God that is so forceful and so powerful and so, and they saw that Ark of the Covenant in the middle of the water. That must have scared them. At that time, the Eternal now says to Joshua, make for yourself flint knives and circumcise again the sons of Israel the second time. Now they were all circumcised in Egypt. Okay? So Joshua made himself flint knives, circumcised the sons of Israel. And it doesn't mean the same person got circumcised twice. Then you didn't get circumcised because there was nothing to circumcise. If you're going to do it once, you know, that's it. There's nothing further. But what he meant that the sons of Israel were going to experience this circumcision ceremony once again for all of them. Now the reason was, in verse 4, the reason was that all the people who came out of Egypt were males. All the males died in the wilderness, and they were circumcised in Egypt, but they hadn't been all the kids that were born during the process of coming out of Egypt, who were 20 years and younger. Most of those had not. They had not been circumcised. For all the people who came out of were circumcised, but all the people who were born during the wilderness time had not been circumcised. So he said, I want all those people who have been born and not circumcised, I want you to circumcise them. Even 20-year-old, you know, if you were born in the first 2 or 3 years coming out of Egypt, you were probably in your 40s or the late 30s. So here are these guys, and they're ready to go to war. They're young warriors, and they want to win. They're soldiers for Israel. They want to go into the land, but circumcise them. Now, I don't know if you remember the story of how in the book of Genesis, how Dinah, one of the Israelite sisters, I mean the Israel's one of Israel's daughters and one of the sisters to all the 12 sons of Israel, how she was mishandled and hurt, and then Simeon and Levi decided to do a terrible thing and said, you guys have to be circumcised. He made all that town circumcised, and when they were circumcised and sore and hurting and they couldn't seem to walk well or do fight well, they killed them. That was a blight on Israel. It was a blight on those tribes. Here now, going into battle, you talk about faith of Joshua. Lord, we're going to go in and fight here. Oh, we're about to, well, these people could attack us. We're now across the Jordan. We're now east of Jericho. There's the city. There's the wall. There's everything. And you want us what now? Let me hear this again. Circumcise all of us, our soldiery? You want that done? We could, you know, we're going to be in terrible shape to fight. Nope. Do it. For all the people came out. Verse 6, for the sons of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, and all the nation, that is, the men of war who came out of Egypt, had perished. So, you know, and he says, they got to do this. He would, so, listen to the voice of the Eternal, to whom the Eternal sworn that he would not let them see the land. You know, they all perished. Then their children, whom they raised up in the place, Joshua circumcised. verse 7. They were all uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised along the way. Now, when they had finished the circumcision, all the nation, they remained in their places, in their camps. I'm like, we can't move very well. We're sore. We're hurting. You don't feel like running. You don't feel like fighting. You don't feel like jumping. You don't feel like climbing. You don't feel like doing anything until you're healed. In verse 8, they stayed in their camps until they were healed. They were not ready to fight. Talk about faith. Talk about faith. Joshua had faith. He had faith that God would be with him. He had faith that God would see to it. Then the Eternal said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you." So the name of the place was called Gilgal, which means rolling. Something's rolled this away, and we're going to call this place Gilgal. While the sons of Israel camped at Gilgal, they observed the Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the month on the desert plains of Jericho, right outside the city of Jericho on those desert plains. On the day after the Passover, verse 11, on the very day after the Passover, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. The manna ceased on that day. Remember, they had been eating manna, which the word manna means, what is it? What is that? And that's what God put it there for them, and they ate that for all those years. And now, the day that they ate that parched grain, now here where we were in the land now, we're in the land, we eat some of the fruit of the land. The manna ceased on the day that they'd eaten some of the produce of the land, so the sons of Israel no longer had manna, and they ate some of the yield of the land of Canaan during that year. They had no time to plant. Guess what they have to have? You're talking Passover. You're talking springtime. This is not fall harvest, right? This is springtime. So you get berries coming up, you get new blossoms, you get the early fruits that were coming up, and you get maybe late the spring grains that were now maturing. Now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. Now this would be scary, okay? There's a man there, and he's got a sword, and you're looking at him. He's opposite me. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" Joshua didn't know him. Didn't recognize him right away. And he said, "No. Rather, I indeed come now as captain of the host of the Eternal." And Joshua, as soon as he heard that, fell on his face to the earth. And he bowed down, and he said to him, "What has my Lord to say to his servant?" Now that is such a beautiful and a classic thing. You're standing in front of the captain. Who is the captain of the host of the Eternal? It's the Eternal. Okay? I'm the captain of the host of the... I'm captain of the armies of the Eternal hosts. He's the Lord of hosts. There are many hosts, the hosts of heaven, the stars of heaven, the hosts of the world, the hosts of various hosts in the Bible. He's the Lord, not just of one host, not just of one army, not just of one area. He's the Lord, the Eternal, of all these hosts. He said, "I'm the Lord of the host of the Eternal, in this case, your army." Joshua fell down at his feet. Fell down before him, bowed to the ground, and said, "What does my Lord have to say to his servant? What do you want to tell me? Give me the command. What should we do?" The captain of the Eternal's host said to Joshua, "Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." You remember that phrase? Do you remember that statement? You remember who it was said to the first time? It was said to Moses when he saw what? The burning bush. And the voice came out of that burning bush. Remove your sandals from your feet. The place you're standing is holy ground. And Moses did it. And listen to verse 15. The last sentence. And Joshua did so. What do you want me to do? Take your sandals off your feet. He did. No argument, no why. He even told them why. Remove your sandals from the feet, for the place you're standing is holy ground. Joshua took them off immediately. And he stood before this captain. He knew who this was. He realized this is the eternal who appeared in a man's kind of a human form, and that's the same one that appeared to Abraham. You remember in the plains of the Mamre there, and he when they came before they went to Sodom and Gomorrah. You remember Abraham realized who they were. He bowed himself. He said, "Well, can I get you?" You know, and it was Abraham, and the Eternal was one of them. But then when they went to Sodom and Gomorrah, it was only two angels, not three men. And the Eternal was not there. Didn't go to Sodom anymore. Sent the angels there. And that concludes chapter 5. The next time, we're going to find out Joshua's orders. What Joshua's orders and the action and the acts of faith. You think, well, we got them all softened up. Let's go in and take them. Nope. We're not going to go there right now. We're going to do something else, something different, something unique, and something you'll never forget. We'll talk more about that in our next sermon.